This episode of Into the Night is brought to you by our loyal listeners and followers. Fazbear Entertainment appreciates your viewership and those who support the show by commenting, sharing, and subscribing. If you wish to support this broadcast, please consider checking out the official merch store and Patreon for more information.
This episode is a continuation of our Security Breach audiobook series. If you haven't watched from the beginning, we recommend starting at episode 26, Security Breach, and listening to all episodes up to this point to know the full context of the storyline so far.
Looks like a giant spider.
That's DJ Music Man. He's kind of the host of the Fazcade.
I don't like spiders, Mr. Thayer.
Yeah, I get you. But just remember, he's the creation. We are the creators. You're in charge. Besides, the DJ doesn't leave his booth. Usually.
What does usually mean?
Well, occasionally the Music Man will be on the move. Big guy like that, it makes for quite the spectacle for guests to see him skitter his way across the dance floor and arcade.
The thing is the size of a semi. How does it not squish people?
The tunnels, Preston. He uses these tunnels you see all punctured into the walls. Now, if you are cold up here, it'll most likely be for the lighting in these tunnels. These things are notoriously unreliable and always cause power surges that overload the area's circuitry. Which is why one of your jobs will also be routinely checking the generators in this section, just in case the power overloads can't take over.
Understood, Mr. Thayer.
Good. Now follow me. These tunnels are pretty convoluted if you're not the Music Man, or Meerkat, but you'll also get the hang of them too. This one right here will take you to the back hallway where we keep the arcade and,
boss?
Yeah.
Is that a bathroom?
Yeah.
Would it be all right if I,
Oh my god. You don't need my permission to pee, kid. Go ahead. Just be careful.
Yes, sir.
There's also a power circuit box in the closet here, so when you're done with your business, we can get back to Fazbear business.
Okay. Boss? Why did you tell me to be careful?
Well, sometimes.
It's got my leg!
I got you, Prez.
Oh my god.
I got you.
Oh my god. Back against the wall, now! It's staring right at us. What do? We wait. Why the hell did it grab me?
Rumor has it that the DJ originally had an experimental bouncer mode for rowdy guests. Supposedly that was removed. But apparently, the programmers must have missed a few lines of code. All right. He's gone. Let's get back to work.
Hey, boss. This job has hazard pay, right?
No. This is episode 43, DJ Music Man.
Well done. There is no need to perform the procedure on the other arm. The auto-assist did it for you.
Gregory smiled. It was a profound relief to be reunited with Freddy once again. When he had called him over the Faz Watch to rendezvous at Parts and Service, his voice carried a palpable sense of relief, almost as if the mere sound of Gregory's reply had lifted a great weight off his shoulders, ironic given that usually the weight he carried was inside his stomach. When he had arrived, Gregory half expected to be swept up in a bone-crushing bear hug, the kind that might accidentally crack his spine. But, as always, Freddy was remarkably gentle. He simply knelt beside him, his concern focused solely on whether Gregory was safe and all parts of him were intact. Fortunately, Gregory didn't need to expend much effort recounting where he'd been or what he'd done, nor did he need to convince Freddy to return to the parts and service chamber. Freddy simply nodded his head with quiet trust, just happy that Gregory was all right, and allowed Gregory to install the components he scavenged from Chica and Monty. The old computer terminal in the room still had the right programs installed to assist in integrating the stolen parts, though a bit of manual labor was still required. Thankfully, the AI voice over the speaker systems was able to calmly guide him through each delicate step. The process had been streamlined to the point that Gregory thought even a child younger than himself might be able to assemble a robot in this frigid workshop. As they exited the tubular chamber together, Freddy glanced down at his hands. Gregory felt a knot form in his stomach. While making his way back to parts and service, he'd done his best to pry away the telltale green plastic remnants from Monty's, if pressed to elaborate, unfortunate and totally accidental fall. But the plates embedded in the palms were fastened with bolts that were far too tight for him to remove by hand or leverage, and the parts and service machine didn't have any settings to replace the purple plastic casing of Monty's hands. Now, Freddy was inspecting them intently, turning his clockwork wrist over and around, examining every contour with quiet scrutiny.
My arms are different. Where did you get these parts?
I'd rather not say.
How fortunate. I should now be able to smash through the cyclone fences around the building, the way Monty does.
Exactly like he did.
Gregory bit his lower lip. He may have come across a little too coy with that remark, but he couldn't help the flicker of schadenfreude that crept out of his voice. Monty had tried to kill him. He was almost certain of it. And had he been given another chance, Gregory was certain he would have done the same to Freddy, perhaps in the same way he'd orchestrated Bonnie's disappearance. Whatever happened, Monty had reaped what he'd sown. No more, no less. Yet Freddy's expression remained unsettled. He rubbed the front of his neck, as if nursing an invisible sore. That's when Gregory noticed the glossy black paint on Freddy's bow tie had changed, likely when he installed Chica's voice box into his throat modulator. He must have replaced his formal attire with a different bow tie, this one chipped and purple in color.
Gregory, this upgrade, it was Chica's. Please, be honest. How did you get it?
Gregory felt his throat tighten. Freddy's expression was characteristically neutral, the synthetic mask unmoving. But his softly glowing white eyes portrayed something more fragile. A pleading look, desperate for comfort, for honesty. Gregory hated the thought of lying to him. But
when I was in the kitchen earlier, she fell into some sort of garbage smasher.
Is she okay?
Well, she's still functional.
Mixed lies with truths were always the easiest to tell. And it wasn't as if he were lying outright. He'd simply left out the who, the when, and the exact nature of how she'd ended up in that trash compactor. Those weren't essential details. Not right now, at least. All Freddy needed to know was that Chica was still operational, or at least capable of mimicking life.
That is a relief.
Freddy looked away from him, head tilted slightly down as though deep in thought. Did he believe him? Gregory wasn't sure. He doubted he'd believe it if the roles were reversed. The words hadn't exactly been comforting. They weren't sweetened with compassion or softened by sincerity. Gregory simply stated what was. Before Gregor could say anything more, Freddy gently shifted the topic.
Now that I have been upgraded, I should be able to access the Roxy Raceway. I have not been there for a very long time, but perhaps you can find some clues on how to deal with Roxy while you are there.
Gregory looked at Freddy the way a con artist might glance at the mark they'd grown to pity, eyes flickering with guilt, edged with the silent panic of being found out. His words must have betrayed everything. He hadn't told Freddy he wanted to go to Roxy Raceway. He certainly hadn't said anything about wanting to deal with Roxy. But Freddy... Freddy had said it as if he already knew. As if he understood. He'd been gone far too long. Maybe he did know. Maybe he was choosing not to ask. Better to live in denial than face the truth that the child you've sworn to protect is systematically dismantling everything and everyone you once called your friends. Poor Freddy. In the span of a single night, his entire world been turned on its head. This place, this pizzaplex, programmed into his mind as a sanctuary, a stage, a home, was little more than a glittering cage filled with beast. Broken, malfunctioning, puppeteered by a stage master hidden behind the metaphorical curtain, he was alone in a zoo of rabid animals. A thought crossed Gregory's mind, quiet and sharp, like the beat of a guilt-ridden heart. What happens to Glamrock Freddy after tonight? Vanessa, head of security, had every intention of ripping his endoskeleton out and replacing it with a blank one when the daycare attendant caught him. Gregory had narrowly stopped that from happening. But Vanessa didn't seem like the type to let betrayal slide. Sooner or later, she'd retaliate. And what about the others? The Glamrocks, savage as they had become, they were still sentient, still capable of remembering who Freddy used to be to them. A leader, a bandmate, a friend. Would they ever look at him the same again? After finding out he had helped the boy who tore them limb from limb and stitched their best parts onto him like some mechanical Frankenstein? No. Freddy couldn't stay here. Not after tonight. Gregory's chest tightened, the decision crystallizing in his mind with a weight he hadn't expected. When those security shutters finally opened, when the night ended and escape was no longer just a plan, he wouldn't be leaving alone. Freddy was coming with him. Into the Night will be right back after these messages. Getting into Roxy Raceway was easier done than said. With Freddy's new upgrades installed, the towering animatronic could now obliterate security fences with exceptional strength and override access panels using a screech from his newly integrated voice modulator. Riding in his chest cavity was starting to feel like hitching a ride in a kangaroo pouch, if that kangaroo was a T-800. With glowing eyes and a fatherly protective streak. After squeezing between rusted crates and brushing past sawdust cake stage props, Gregory finally reached the shuttered entrance to Roxy Raceway. The gate recognized their presence and Gregory's security clearances and shuddered before slowly ascending, revealing a sprawling vista of polystyrene tan dunes and blackened racetrack asphalt, like a forgotten desert speedway was removed from the crust of the earth and dropped right into the Freddy Fazbear Mega Pizzaplex. According to his map of the Pizzaplex, Roxy Raceway was divided into two main zones. The first one was on the opposite side of the track, the Glam Rock Salon. As the Pizzaplex's resident diva, Roxanne Wolf had been marketed as the face of beauty for preteen girls and young women. Makeup kits, hair products, even branded razors. Roxy was the face on all of it. Some premium ticket packages even let guests enjoy a spa day with Roxy herself. In the early days of the Pizzaplex, girls could even apply Roxy's makeup directly. But once the storyteller was installed, that part of the event was quietly retired. Permanently. The site of the attraction Gregory had entered was the actual go-kart racetrack itself. The entrance to the enclosure was flanked on both sides by metal bleachers built into the walls, raised just a meter or so beneath the three-story ceiling. The surrounding walls were painted in the idealized visage of a warm desert mesa. Giant sand dunes stretched across the murals, the landscape dotted with stylized inselbergs, pinnacles, and yardangs, rust-colored stone formations shutting toward a bright, clear blue sky. Plastic replicas of wind-carved fins and ventifacts divided the area into navigatable zones, acting as themed waypoints for guests to meet up or orient themselves. There were other props, green metal cacti, eggshell plastic bull skulls, and fake crows suspended from the ceiling, completing the aesthetic. Although, wandering the place after hours with no crowds of people shifting in multiple directions, it gave the whole place the feel of a post-apocalyptic amusement park. The racetrack itself was clearly the centerpiece. Behind it loomed a massive mural of Roxy, clad in a black leather biker jacket and sunglasses, waving twin checkered flags with confident abandon, as if silently reveling in the daily chaos she presided over. The course itself was designed as two interlocking figure eights, each filled with tight semicircular turns, bordered by rubber tires and anchored by cement pylons. Part of the track rose into elevated second-story loops before dipping back down in a cascade of asphalt and caution paint. Gregory rubbed his chin, deep in thought. The question was never where to destroy Roxy. It was how. Her AI was designed for competition, obsessively focused on self-worth. According to one of the engineers responsible for the Glamrock's experimental upgrades, Roxy's optical sensors had been fitted with technology derived from Fazbear's virtual reality simulator project, some sort of virtual augmented neural network integration technology that allowed Roxy to see things just a bit differently. Gregory wasn't exactly sure how exactly to imagine that perception, but according to the thickly accented engineer whom he listened to his brief ramblings on, the upgrade allowed Roxy to navigate the raceway with ease, especially when she needed to shut down a group of overly competitive teens who were, quote, ruining the fun for everyone, unquote. Of course, that also revealed the flaw in the game system they developed and the personality they had gave her. She couldn't actually win unless the game system gave her explicit permission to do so. And for someone like Roxy, whose entire persona revolved around being the best, that meant she was essentially designed to lose. Over and over and over again. Gregory hopped out of Freddy's chest cavity and approached the railing that separated the bleachers from the raceway below. Freddy followed quietly, his metal frame clicking faintly with each step. Gregory surveyed the course below with a long, contemplative look. It was perfect. Roxy's deepest flaw was her obsessive need to prove herself, so luring her here felt like a no-brainer. But there was one flaw in the plan. He hadn't accounted for where Fazbear Entertainment actually stored the go-karts themselves. If he wanted to bait her into a trap, and in this case, it seemed most likely the best trap would be a race, he'd need wheels. Which meant, now we had to explore. Descending a concrete stairwell, Gregory stepped onto the concourse ground floor. The main walking area around the Glamrock Salon was absurdly oversized, designed to make even a grown adult feel like a miniature figurine inside a child's race car playset. It was flanked by an artificial sand barrier, though Gregory couldn't tell if it was real or just some strange combo of dyed plaster dust and maybe asbestos. While the raceway track itself was clean and smooth, the surrounding concourse was speckled with a fine layer of this faux sand, like a clear night sky peppered with dull, dusty stars. Every footstep let out a soft crunch beneath his sneakers. It made him wince at first, but eventually he was able to tune it out. As he made his way around the interior, he passed by a row of party garages, rentable suites decked out for kids' birthdays, all lined up with dusty banners and half-deflated balloons. During normal operating hours, they had been filled with cheering families and sugar-hyper kids. If his friend Cassie ever had another birthday party at the Pizzaplex, she definitely would have wanted it at Roxy's, no doubt. That is, if her dad could afford it, even with his employee discount. Between the main boarding areas for the racetrack and the party garages sat an oddly placed food vendor, Temple of the Fox's Sushi Rolls. Gregory always found it weird how unceremoniously Fazbear Entertainment retired the old Foxy log ride. Once upon a time, it had run in tandem with Roxy Raceway, both desert-themed attractions. Though where Roxy leaned into sleek modern grit, Foxy had been a rugged Old West experience. They hadn't gotten rid of Foxy completely. A small toddler play area still bore his name, tucked away in some forgotten corner of the Pizzaplex. But even that had been mostly shut down for ages, with the larger sections of the attraction fenced off behind tarps and plywood, with a big, strangely desperate and uneasy, under-construction signage scraped over shuttered doors in red spray paint. No one ever explained why the character had been shelved, and the area had remained sealed ever since. Speaking of construction, Roxy Raceway was full of it. Metal piping, stacked drywall, rolls of insulation, and crates labeled Property of Fazbear Construction Inc., with the stupid smug helpy face cluttered nearly every corner. Gregory knew the raceway was supposedly undergoing development. But if so, for what? There were no signs of new racetrack additions, no expansion areas, no grand remodels, just piles of material without any clear structure in place where it was going to. If anything, Roxy Raceway felt less like a racetrack and more like an unfinished scrapyard. Well, leave no stone unturned. Gregory started poking around the inner ring, looking for any kind of staff hub or foreman's post. After several minutes of weaving between supply crates and some staff bots under repair, he came across a work table shoved up against the back wall. Blueprints, scribbled schematics, and dotted printouts were strewn across the surface, like a chaotic paper mosaic. The topmost page had deep pencil grooves running beneath it. Ghost sketches from earlier drafts had been erased out. The table stood about as tall as his head, so Gregory grabbed a metal back chair and dragged it noisily across the concrete. He climbed up it, balanced himself, and leaned in to study the documents. Freddy stood right behind him, peering over his shoulder. Even with Gregory standing on the chair, the boy's head only reached Freddy's chest, right where the bear's new violet bow tie shimmered dully under the raceway's flickering overhead lights. Gregory skimmed the schematics as quickly as he could. According to the documents, Fazbear Entertainment had originally planned to expand the Roxy Raceway attraction outward. New loops, maybe a second pit stop zone. But something went wrong, and as Gregory read onward, the confusion around the lack of surface-level construction was finally starting to make sense. All of the activity had been happening underground. Notes scrawled in the margins and scribbled on post-its told a frustrating story of halted work and structural failures. From the signature stamped on most of the schematics, it looked like the wrecking crew's lead name was Tate. His team had repeatedly poured concrete only for it to fracture, crack spiderwebbing across the foundation just minutes after setting. Curious, Gregory tapped into the Fazbear Entertainment communication server using his Fazwatch. It took a moment, but he was able to pull up archive logs tied to Tate's ID. Within minutes, he found a folder of outgoing reports sent by Tate directly to the corporate uppers.
We've been getting these dumbass brownouts for a while now. I know, I probably should have dealt with it sooner, but honestly, I kept forgetting. Too much is going on right now. It's difficult to keep my head on straight with it. Anyway, I finally got around to doing some digging. Turns out someone's pulling a stupendous amount of power from the worksite. Ronan and I, we originally thought the new cracks in the cement were from foundational issues, maybe hollow ground or, like, a sinkhole, something like that. I had the staff bots poke around, and they traced the power drain to this high-voltage cable that just disappears right into the foundation. No clue where it leads. So, we're putting a pin in any more expansion over at Roxy's until we figure out what's going on down there. It should take no longer than however long it takes me to get to it.
Gregory didn't know much about construction. He was more of a tech whiz, but even he doubted that a sinkhole required electricity. Curious even more, he scrolled through the next few log entries and found another message from Tate, this time directed to Fazbear Human Resources.
We busted through the foundation today, and guess what, Margaret? There's a whole damn elevator shaft down there. Like, someone had to know about this, right? Under Utah Code 5855501, it is considered unlawful for a contractor or business to disregard building or construction law. That includes misrepresenting material facts to your engineers. When we were poking around the rise before this rat trap even opened, I don't remember even seeing anything that hinted at this. So unless it just magically appeared, which honestly wouldn't be the weirdest thing around here, someone had to know about this. Anyway, whatever it is, someone managed to forget there's a full-on buried facility under the raceway. And it's now drawing power from Roxy Raceway. Look, Orby, I'm unlikely able to get anything else done today. I'll take a team down in the morning to check it out. In the meantime, if you could do me a solid and ask around, see if anyone knew we had a little actual subterranean layer under our feet, that'd be great. In fact, I'll just hold out until I hear your response. Don't want to make work for myself that I'll have to undo or do.
Gregory blinked. An old elevator shaft? What was this place built over, a nuclear bunker of some kind? He looked back at Freddy. The bear animatronic's eyes had shifted. For a moment, just a flicker, Freddy looked distant. neither robotic nor malfunctioning, just elsewhere, like he was replaying a memory he shouldn't have had. Gregory caught it just barely before Freddy turned his head to scan the raceway for threats. The moment passed. Gregory didn't say anything. Part of him wanted to ask, to push. But another part, the same part that felt guilt gnawing at him for lying to Freddy about where he got those brand new parts of his, caused him to hesitate on pushing on any issue with his friend. Whatever was down there, though, it was halting all progress from building at Roxy's raceway until it was sorted, which was doing nothing to soothe Roxy's need for speed.
Roxy never misses a race, and now that the raceway is shut down, she's gotta be climbing the walls. At least, I think those are what the dents in the wall are from. Every single time we try a test run on the track, she just has to throw herself in the middle of it. She's got like a sixth sense when rubber meets the road. She keeps pulling this stunt. We're never getting the track fixed, let alone open again. I recommend the parts and service team restructure their maintenance schedule, coincide with our track testing, or at least distract her with a mirror or something when we have a car on track. Her ego is large enough. There has to be some corner an intern can polish for 15 minutes.
Gregory smirked. Just as he thought, Roxy couldn't help herself. If he stirred up a little trouble on her turf, she'd take the bait. That was her flaw. She had to win. Now, all he had to do was find a working go-kart, which, thankfully, would be easy now that he understood a bit about the construction going on. From Tate's documents, it looked like most of the go-karts had been put in storage until the new renovations were completed. Until then, a few were still stationed adjacent to the attraction's information center, ones configured for staff bot use in crash test runs. Gregory had never thought to look there. He hopped down from the chair and took off at a brisk jog, Freddy following closely behind. Just a few meters from the info center sat a lone go-kart, clearly prepped for the next day's test race. Gregory's eyes widened. It was sleek, almost brand new. The body was Freddy's signature orange-brown, with a cyan lightning bolt striking down the hood from the steering wheel to the chassis. On top of the raised hood sat a bold white circle with a painted black 4 in the center. All in all, the go-kart was very high-end, but there was only one issue. The driver. The staff bot seated in the cart was a torso only, its chassis bolted in place behind the seat. But that wasn't the main issue. It had no head. Well, Gregory had already planned to do this by himself. He went to shuffle his way into the pilot seat when a metal paw grabbed his shoulders.
I am so sorry, Gregory. It appears you are not tall enough to ride the carts alone. You will need a working driver assist bot in order to use this cart.
Freddy, the robot's missing its head!
Oh, I would love to drive with you, but I am too big.
Gregory sighed. Fair enough, Freddy would probably crush the cart just trying to sit in it, and even if he could hold his weight, it definitely wasn't going anywhere fast. Still, this sucked. He leaned over the cockpit again, checking for any sort of ignition switch or manual start. Nothing. The cart was fully automated, entirely dependent on the staff bot. Without its head, the whole thing was just as stationary as one of the many polyester boulders surrounding him. Unwilling to resign himself to the fate of Fazbear Entertainment, all of a sudden caring about safety protocols, for the next 10 minutes, he scoured the area around the information kiosk, rifling through side lots, cracked crates, and maintenance hatches. Every cart he found was damaged beyond repair. The half-body staff bots were even worse. Mauled, twisted, scratched up like someone let a wild animal loose on a robot showroom. Gee, I wonder who could be responsible for that. the only card that still had wheels on the ground and a functioning power core, was the one with the headless pilot. Of course. Just as Gregory was about to let out an eternal scream into his shirt from the rage boiling up inside of him, he felt the ground shake slightly beneath him. He turned to see Freddy was rushing over to him, carrying something in a football cradle.
Gregory, good news! I found a driver assist head!
Freddy held out his arm, revealing the decapitated head of a staff bot. It was scratched and dented, clearly the result of an encounter with Roxy. More than likely, it was a leftover part from a decommissioned assistant bot, long since retired. But if Gregory could get it working again, he could reattach the head and get that cart up and running.
I do not believe it will work in that condition, though. However, there is a staff repair station in the West Arcade. You will need a dance pass to access the West Arcade. Have you checked the party garages? The raceway was closed very abruptly prior to the new construction. Guests tend to leave things behind during emergency situations.
Gregory frowned. Emergency situations? That hadn't come up in any of the security logs he skimmed. He hadn't read anything about Roxy Raceway shutting down because of an emergency. What exactly was Fazbear Entertainment hiding down there? He shook his head. Doesn't matter right now. He had a lead and a clear objective. Find a party pass, fix the bot head, get back to the raceway, decommission the wolf. Freddy shifted beside him, started to speak, but stopped shortly. Gregory looked up at him. He looked almost embarrassed.
I must stay here. I wish I could join you, but after tonight's stage incident, I am not allowed to perform. When I step onto the West Arcade dance floor, I cannot stop myself. It is a programming bug.
Gregory stifled a chuckle, just when he couldn't think Freddy could become any more adorable. Yes, it would be unfortunate that he wouldn't be able to protect him again. After all the time they'd been apart, it would have been nice to have Freddy watching his back again, even if he was going at it hard on the dance floor. But maybe it was better this way. Now Freddy wouldn't have to see what Gregory planned to do to Roxy. Once he found a dance pass, he'd bring Freddy to the West Arcade's entrance, let him wait nearby, and rendezvous back at parts and service, once Roxy was permanently out of the picture.
Head to the security office. You'll find the staff bot repair machine there. If you see the DJ, say hello. He is such a nice fellow.
Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
Did you know that bears like pizza sauce more than honey? It's true. Before their extinction, bears were known to attack pizza delivery trucks more than any other food service vehicles. This has been another fun Faz fact.
As the elevator door slid open, Gregory was immediately confronted by the ostentatious spectacle of a towering golden shrine dedicated to the glam rock band. Four gilded statues, Monty, Roxy, and Chica, stood tall like triumphant champions, while Freddy, elevated above the rest atop a stack of golden stereos, extended a single finger skyward in a dramatic pose that commanded all attention. The monument's exaggerated grandeur was only exasperated by the blinding interplay of reflections dancing off their polished surfaces, forcing Gregory to squint against the assault of radiant glares. Slender, cylindrical light fixtures descended from the ceiling like ceremonial pillars, bathing the statues in an iridescent cascade that shifted from piercing ruby to subdued turquoise. It felt like less a corporate display and more like Fazbear Entertainment's attempt to construct a sacrosanct altar, an almost religious tribute to their fabricated world of anthropomorphic mascots and the immaculate family-friendly image they insisted was divine truth. Gregory, who would normally have been far too sleep-deprived by this hour to offer more than a groggy hup, somehow managed to conjure a string of particularly colorful mumbles that would have earned him a bar of soap to the mouth if his parents were within earshot. Maybe that quick detour through a nearby Faz venue to perk up his energy levels was a bad idea, because a few cups of fizzy Faz later and he felt like he could sprint a marathon powered entirely by the unholy cocktail of sugar and carbonation now coursing through his veins. The West Arcade, more accurately known by its flashy moniker, the Fazcade, was a two-story hybrid of arcade, karaoke bar, and dance hall. It stood out as one of the more coveted attractions within the Pizzaplex, which naturally meant it was locked behind yet another paywall for visitors. A dance pass. Gregory was just relieved he managed to snag one back at Roxy Raceway. It looked like Tate had been using a few of his staff bots to snatch up free loot from panicked guests, because Gregory found a whole stash hidden under his personal workbench in the construction zone. The Fazcade itself was divided into three functional zones. On the western side, a medium-sized alcove hosted a lineup of arcade cabinets, pinball machines, crane games, and basketball simulators. Gregory was intimately familiar with that area. He didn't even need to look to know that his initials still reigned supreme on most of the high scoreboards. A curved staircase near the arcade section led to the second floor, which was strewn with even more machines, but it was also home to the karaoke rooms. Gregory had never sung a note in any of them himself, but you could spot the room easily while wandering from game to game. They were obnoxiously opaque, gleaming square white tile floors, stark walls, and sterile lighting that bathed the space in a surreal clinical glow. The rooms lacked doors but were soundproofed to the point, and that little noise escaped them or penetrated in from the rest of the Fazcade. But the true star of the West Arcade resided on the eastern side of the first floor. Just beyond the smoke-drenched dance floor loomed an enormous mechanical monstrosity. And he was there now, slumbering silently. Four of his six appendages were tucked beneath him, while his oversized head rested delicately in the soft, plushed, gloved hands of his two foremost limbs. DJ Music Man. Gregory crept forward, each step tentative, as if afraid that the sheer weight of his curiosity might wake the Titan. He'd never been much of a dancer, certainly not in public, so he had only ever glimpsed the DJ from afar. But up close? Good God! The thing was colossal, far beyond what Gregory would comfortably classify as an animatronic. At its scale and density, it bordered on industrial machinery. The DJ was asleep, which somehow made the entire encounter even more unsettling. Since when did giant mechanical spiders need rest? Its head alone was larger than Gregory, and would still be taller if he stacked another version of himself on his own shoulders. DJ Music Man's full length rivaled that of a school bus, and with six arms, three on each side of its segmented arachnoid torso, each forearm thick as a tree trunk, the machine could probably hoist a compact car without breaking a sweat. His design, aside from the sheer monstrosity of his scale, was a curious blend of clown, ringmaster, and modern-day DJ. His oversized black lifeless eyes, when activated, could ignite into LED displays that conveyed not only irises, but full visual imagery. His chassis was a soft, sterile white, with light blue accents around the eyebrows and cheeks. His upper row of teeth featured evenly spaced black ridges where each tooth met the gum line. forming the illusion of a piano keyboard. Atop his bulbous head sat a comically small top hat, flanked by bright red and yellow headphones. Below his chin, a dainty little bow tie completed the ensemble, along with each of his 6 four-fingered hands, wearing pristine white gloves that looked like they belonged in a Mickey Mouse cartoon. Standing closer to the massive creature, Gregory could now hear a low, guttural moaning emanating from DJ Music Man. Peering between the animatronic's gleaming ivory teeth, he noticed an esoteric purple glow emanating from within its mouth. Strange white spirals appeared and disappeared in a hazy hypnotic rhythm, like ghostly wisps trapped in a digital fog. It wasn't real, of course, just a display screen mounted at the back of the DJ's throat. But the moaning, that was real. And as Gregory tuned his ears more closely, he finally identified it for what it was. The DJ was snoring. Gregory grimaced at the sound and promptly decided to keep moving. If he wasn't causing any trouble, he had no intention of waking the sleeping Leviathan. He certainly wasn't going to take Freddy's well-meaning but reckless advice to say hello to the spider patriarch of the Fazcade, especially not while trespassing in his cavernous neon-lit parlor. Without another glance, Gregory made his way toward the staircase, aiming for the staffbot repair station nestled in the back of the arcade. As he ascended the steps, he took note of several gaping holes embedded in the walls and ceiling, each varied in size, ringed with neon LEDs that pulsed in rhythmic succession to simulate a sense of forward motion, like some kind of high-tech vacuum, drawing in air and light and attention alike. Gregory thought they looked like decorative wormholes designed to dazzle the eyes of overstimulated patrons. A fitting metaphor, Gregory thought, for the way Fazbear Entertainment inhaled the contents of people's wallets with the same unrelenting pull. Most were purely ornamental, sure, but the larger apertures were in fact access points, designed to allow DJ Music Man to extend his limbs and traverse the entirety of the Fazcade with eerie fluidity. It was an impressive feat of engineering, to be sure. A spectacle, even. But no amount of admiration could fully suppress the intrusive thought that always crept in whenever he visited the Fazcade with Tony or Ellis. The sudden image of one of those monstrous limbs sweeping through and reducing someone to a smear of pulverized flesh on the dance floor tiles. Gregory shuddered as the visual crossed his mind. DJ Music Man had always struck Gregory as peculiar. Not in terms of design or strength, though the giant techno clown spider was certainly unnerving to some, nor even as a presence within the Pizzaplex itself. Rather, the animatronic's ambiguous place within the broader Fazbear band, it always made him inquisitive. For what little he knew, DJ Music Man wasn't technically a Fazbear character, at least not in the traditional sense. Something about multiple copyright holders, licensing agreements, and overlapping corporate interest, messy, tangled legalese that made his head spin. The bottom line, as Gregory understood it, was that while the character was part of Fazbear Entertainment, the animatronic character itself had apparently been developed and manufactured by an entirely separate corporate entity. And yet, despite the implication of outside ownership, Gregory had never seen the DJ featured in any other venue, event, or promotional material beyond the Pizzaplex. No commercials, no cameos, nothing. It was contradictory, confusing. But then again, so was everything else under the Fazbear corporate umbrella. After a minute of navigating the upper floor, Gregory finally located the staff bot repair station, tucked away in the eastern corner of the second story. It sat adjacent to a cluster of ATMs and a small bank of Roxy go-kart simulators, flickering idly in standby mode. The repair station itself was nestled deep within one of the Fazcade's back corridors, marked by faded signage indicating it to be a storage space. The maintenance room was directly attached to a long corridor that, further down, led to an area likely housing both refurbished retro consoles and newly assembled arcade cabinets awaiting installation. Entering into the staff-bot repair room, Gregory took note of the eclectic, somewhat ramshackle space. It was practically a microcosm of Fazbear operations that Gregory had grown all too familiar with by now. A dusty security console clung to one wall, its surface littered with crumbled-up receipts and soda-stained rings by paper cups. Nearby, another control panel was labeled with rows and sectors of the Fazcade, presumably for deactivating individual machines when they glitched out or when a rowdy child broke down. And at the far end of the room, nestled in an awkward corner, was what passed for a break area for Fazbear standards. A lonely table, a plastic chair, and a coffee machine that looked like it had survived a minor explosion. In other words, exactly what Gregory expected. In the center of the room itself was what Gregory could only presume to be the staff-bot repair station, a boxed area with windows on all sides so you could peer in. The innards of the compartment looked less like maintenance repair and more like something pulled straight out of a torture chamber. From the ceiling of the enclosed space dangled a network of multi-jointed arms, each one fitted with sharp, precise tools that gleamed under the medical-like fluorescence. Scalpels, pincers, needles on rotating heads, tools designed to fix malfunction, sure, but also perfectly capable of dismantling something with surgical cruelty. Why did every Fazbear device not meant for public eyes look like it had been designed by a sadist? To Gregory, this was less Fazbear head repair and more like Shreddy Fazchair. He circled the small room until his eyes landed on a small labeled hatch, marked Broken Head. Kneeling down, he unlatched the compartment with a metallic clunk and gingerly slid the Saffbot head he'd been carrying around inside the receptacle, like he was mailing off a package. With another solid push, he sealed the hatch shut. The moment the metal clicked into place, the room dimmed. All at once, a soft, discordant hum rose around him, a chorus of machinery powering down in eerie synchronization. Then, a loud crackle sounded overhead as the room's speaker system came to life, followed by a familiar robotic voice.
The West Arcade was not shut down properly. Some data may be corrupted. Initializing startup sequence. Before proceeding, reset the audio manager circuit breaker, located next to the dance floor.
Gregory, the security system knows you are here and has locked you out. Reset the breakers and restore power to the West Arcade. Then you can repair the staff bot head.
Gregory felt a jolt of adrenaline spike through his chest. Not from the security lockdown, but from something far more unsettling. Freddy had known exactly where he was and what he had just done in the Fazcade. That could only mean one thing. The alarm he tripped had sent out a signal, one received by every Glamrock animatronic. The band was coming for him. Gregory didn't waste a second. He launched himself out of the employee room and back into the open floor of the Fazcade. His shoes slapped against the ground as he tore down the stairs, nearly tumbling over himself like his foot had been snagged in a spider's web. Reaching the ground floor, he sped past the towering statues, tore through the artificial smoke that clouded the dance floor, and sprinted toward a rest area overlooking the ballroom. There, illuminated in a flickering yellow, was the circuit breaker. He didn't even hesitate. Gregory grabbed the rubber-coated handle, jumped, and used his own weight to pull the switch into place. The satisfying clack of the breaker echoed through the space like a gunshot. It was at that moment the silence struck him. Not total silence. Music was playing, but something was wrong. The hairs on the back of Gregory's neck rose. He hadn't noticed it before. He had been so narrowly focused on restoring power. But now the realization hit him like a punch to the gut. Why didn't he hear snoring? Gregory turned back toward the DJ booth. Empty. The massive mechanical spider was gone. In its place, the air was thick with rising music, not blasting from the speakers, but approaching like a descending fog from every single opening in the walls. Every maintenance hatch, every DJ-sized crawlspace, every vent and tunnel in the Fazcade was now humming with a song Gregory had never heard before.
Great job. Safety protocols deactivated. Pram zapped. Brun DJ protocols. Reticulating splines. Please reset circuit breakers to all zones. Three zones remain. Janitorial service. Arcade. Karaoke.
Gregory's breath hitched. Sweat clung to his forehead, trailing down his neck and soaking into his palms. No time to hesitate. He vaulted over the railing of the rest area, landing hard and sprinting toward the restrooms. They were tucked behind the golden statues of the glam rock band. He slammed into the men's room door with his shoulder, nearly slipping on the slick tile floor as he stumbled inside. No breaker in sight. He turned. There was a gray metal door. A janitor's closet. Bingo. He yanked it open. The smell of bleach hit him instantly, but he didn't stop. At the back wall, a breaker box sat waiting. Gregory didn't think. He threw the lever up. A low hum vibrated beneath his feet. The circuit came to life, sending current flowing through the Fazcade like blood rushing back into dead veins. Outside the closet, the flickering lights over the sinks pulsed once, twice, and then stabilized into a steady fluorescent glare. One zone down, two more to go. Gregory stepped out of the janitor's closet. He jumped back just in time as the bathroom door slammed open with a force that rattled the hinges. A giant eye, in a grin wider than the length of his entire body. Music Man was here. The DJ's massive head loomed outside the doorframe, far too large to fit through. Yet that didn't stop him. With slow mechanical fluidity, Music Man reared his car-sized head back and thrust one long gloved arm through the entrance. Fingers like bone-white mallets swiped across the tiles, groping for Gregory's leg. Gregory slammed himself against the wall, heart pounding. The DJ couldn't see into the restroom and reached at the same time, so he blindly searched with brute force. The massive palm hit the floor. Concrete trembled beneath the impact, the shockwaves rumbling like an earthquake. Gregory's eyes darted around. There was a second bathroom exit, still in the same corridor, still with the DJ. But what choice did he have? As the hand swept too far left, Gregory took his chance. He bolted from behind the stalls, sprinting full tilt toward the second door, and shut it open with both hands. Light from the corridor poured in, and he froze in awe. The Music Man was above him, towering like a stegosaurus. The DJ's body filled the hallway, arms sprawled wide, but he was still focused on the first entrance, peeking in, just enough for Gregory to weave beneath his mechanical limbs and dart his way toward the Eastern Arcade. The stupid announcer mentioned the arcade, which wasn't helpful. Everything in the Fazcade was technically part of an arcade, but it's not like the place was a maze. Gregory dashed past a row of pinball machines. He skidded backward just in time as an arcade cabinet toppled toward him. An electric roar followed, and Gregory hit the floor hard, landing flat on his back. Montgomery Gator. The animatronic was clinging to the backside of the fallen cabinet, clearly the one who shoved it over. He was a wreck, missing both legs, crawling forward with what remained of his arms. But the fear in his glowing eyes hadn't dulled. If anything, it had sharpened. Gregory acted quick. He drew his phaser blaster and fired once, twice, three times, and a direct hit on the fourth. A flash of light struck Monty's face, and the gator screeched in mechanical agony, thrashing and performing a solo death roll in place. Gregory scrambled to his feet and sprinted to the back wall, ducking between rows of arcade cabinets. There, tucked in between two games, was another breaker box. He slammed the switch up. The music changed. The thump of the bass grew heavier, more chaotic. Lights flickered. Gregory looked up. From one of the massive foxholes above, two gloved hands gripped the edges. They pulled. Music Man emerged, its face pushed through the neon-lit apparatus, like a demon slipping through a crack in reality. Gregory spun, his eyes darting, looking for cover. A baby stroller. Not ideal, but beggars couldn't be choosers. He dove in, curled up tight, and yanked the cover down just as the DJ dropped fully into the arcade. It moved with eerie precision. Three large, massive arms gripped the floor like stilts. The other three used the smaller holes in the circular hatchways in the wall as handholds for him to easily navigate parallel across the wall. Gregory held his breath. The beat pulsed louder and louder, vibrating through the stroller's plastic frame and shaking his tiny chest. Music Man scanned the room with that monstrous ivory grin, head bobbing to the rhythm. But it didn't see him. After a long, tense moment, it turned toward a tunnel large enough to fit its towering frame, then vanished into the darkness, head first, slipping into the abyss. Gregory pulled himself out of the stroller, eye scanning for Monty. Nothing. Just the faint sounds of groans and static-laced roars echoing from somewhere deeper in the dance hall. Well, he wasn't sticking around to find out where it was if it wasn't near. He bolted for the stairwell and launched himself up the steps. As he climbed, something caught his eye. More than a dozen fingers emerged from a massive circular opening in the ceiling. A ceiling which he now only realized was decorated purple with a black web string design. Six pairs of white gloves gripped the concrete exterior like claws. Music Man slithered out from his web of tubes, dragging his arachnoid body along the ceiling. Its hollow stare locked onto Gregory, with the same lifeless grin as ever, his gaze following him like a spotlight. Gregory sprinted harder. There were no ceiling holes above the karaoke portion of the Fazcade. If he could just get across the outer rim of the second floor, he'd be safe, at least for a moment. He made it to the area above the karaoke bar but couldn't spot a breaker room anywhere. There was an information kiosk. It wasn't much, but it had a nook beneath the desk he could hide under. He dove inside and pressed himself against the cool tile as the thunderous bass of Music Man's approach shook the floor. The DJ's massive body crawled overhead, spanning the entire width of the kiosk. It took several seconds for it to pass, its limbs moving in perfect rhythm with the booming music. Another second later, it slipped into another foxhole in the back wall of the karaoke hall, vanishing like a shadow between strobes of light. Gregory peeked out. A sharp pain shot through his arm, metal fingers sticky with sewage and remnants of moldy pizza. It was Chica. She had appeared from behind the kiosk, her grip like a vice. The cinch was worse than ever, reeking of rotten grease from her escapades in the Pizzaplex's underbelly. Gregory's free hand fumbled for his Fazcam that clung tightly across his chest. He snapped a photo, and a blinding dual cone of light burst from the ear lenses. Chica shrieked, more static than scream, and stumbled backwards, systems overclocked, and she slunk down, letting go of his arm but still standing rigidly like a statue. Panting, Gregory rubbed his arm, the pain searing, but it wasn't broken. He ran, dashing across the second floor. He finally spotted it, the last breaker box, nestled beside a pair of arcade machines, one featuring some kind of mafia-themed Freddy Fazbear. He didn't stop. He yanked the switch up. The lights around him surged, but the music didn't stop. In fact, it got louder. The entire arcade lit up, pulsing with sickening neon. Every light was overwhelming, stimulating every nerve and sense he had. Every bass drop thundered like a war drum. His sense of smell was immediately hit with a taste of metal and copper, and he felt like he was fighting to even breathe in such an open space.
Almost done. There is a software update available. Reset the final circuit breaker located at the south end of the arcade maintenance hallway.
Oh, of course. Another breaker box. Gregory rolled his eyes and exhaled shakily through his nose. Naturally, nothing could ever be simple here. He quickly checked his six. Left, right, clear. He sprinted back toward the karaoke rooms. Chica had thankfully disappeared and kicked open the door to the storage hallway. Passing the dimly lit staff bot repair room, no breaker box in there, he recalled, he pushed further down the narrow corridor where the arcade cabinets would be kept. The maintenance hallway was long, extending down at least 100 feet, and was cluttered with shelves, old tables, and bins, overflowing with wires and tools. Defunct machines sat side by side with pristine ones. Diagnostic charts fluttered from their glass screens. The whole place looked like a museum of an eccentric kleptomaniac collector of arcade games. Gregory weaved through the maze of cabinets and finally spotted it. The breaker box, bolted at the far end of the back wall. He sprinted hard and flipped the master switch.
Well done. The arcade has successfully rebooted. Return to the security office.
Gregory finally let out an exhale, which immediately got caught in his throat. The sound, that telltale rhythm, the deep thrum of a beat building up like a bass drop from hell. Gregory turned toward the cavernous hole at the end of the hall. Gloved hands, a massive grin. The thing pulled itself through the darkness, its expression unchanged, but the energy behind it felt different, likely because the bass of his song was more aggressive than ever. Gregory was already running, weaving through the cabinets. He stopped just in time as he heard the groan of metal, the shift in air pressure, and then the crash. An arcade machine slammed into the ground inches from where he'd just been. He skidded to a stop, heart hammering, and looked back. Music Man was throwing arcade cabinets now, hulking slabs of plastic and metal flung like toys in Gregory's direction, smashing and blocking escape routes in one go. Gregory scrambled over the fallen cabinet, glass and wire sparking beneath him. More machines flew overhead, each impact like a grenade of sound and shrapnel. The deafening music boomed from the DJ's wide-open maw. But Gregory kept moving. He cut left, then right, ducked a flung cabinet, slid beneath another. Then finally, at the hallway's end, he flung himself into the staff bot repair room, diving headfirst just as Music Man rounded the corner. He hit the floor hard, landing on his stomach. Then he crab-walked backward, eyes locked on the doorway. A hand, white glove, fingertips curling around the frame. The bass peaked. But then, the hand pulled back. Another pair of hands came into view, then also receded. The music dissipated slowly. And after a pregnant pause, just like that, silence. Gregory laid on the floor, chest rising and falling with ragged breasts. Gee, such a friendly fellow, eh, Freddy? And with all that said, I think we have found the perfect stopping point for tonight's program. of Into the Night. Now that Gregory survived the Music Man...
Music Man!
All right, we get it. Will he be successful in decommissioning Roxy with his fixed staff bot head? Will it even matter given how the other Glamrocks have somehow survived Gregory's attempts to destroy them? And what about Vanessa? Will she have some plan to thwart Gregory's attempt to escape the Pizzaplex? All of that and more, next time, on Into the Night. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to stay updated, please consider subscribing, following, or sharing this podcast. It truly helps us broaden our reach. Consider following us on our Twitter, @FazbearPodcast, joining our Discord, or supporting us on our merch store or Patreon using the various links in the description of this episode. As always, I have been your host, Nick Black, and I would like to thank you all once again for listening. Have a good night, and drive home safe.